Does financial literacy education in the US really suck? That's a question we want to answer today. And why is this? I mean, many of you know that you used to study biology, history, maybe even philosophy to a certain extent. But how to balance a checkbook, use your credit card, was something that you weren't taught in school. Many of us weren't. And the sad part is that many of you who went to college, the first thing you saw when you went to a college campus was what? A credit card table who gave you access to thousands of dollars that your parents wouldn't give you because you weren't quote unquote mature enough. And fast forward a few years, some of you accumulated a lot of debt, whether it was student loan debt or credit card debt, and you realized it wasn't free money, that was something you're going to have to pay back with the thing you didn't learn in school called interest. Well, brothers and sisters, we need to try to make a change. We're going to watch this video and see why financial literacy education in the US sucks and what we can do about it to help ourselves and to help those who are coming after us. Let's check this out.
If you've clicked on this video, you're probably familiar with this kind of sentiment.
Why aren't we taught financial literacy in school?
Imagine if school taught us compound interest over mitochondria being the powerhouse.
Credit card debt isn't taught in high school.
To some extent, research supports this. According to a 2019 study by the National Bureau of Economic Research, over half of U.S. adults are considered financially illiterate. And that lack of literacy is one driving force behind the financial instability a lot of Americans face. We're over $1 trillion in credit card debt, over a quarter of us don't have any retirement savings, and over a third of us would struggle to cover a $400 emergency expense.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. My name is A.B. Ridgway. I'm the host of Financial Advisors, Say the Darndest Things of My Mom's Favorite Christian Financial Advisor. And brothers and sisters, as a certified private wealth advisor professional with over a decade of experience, this is something I try to beat over everyone's head. Financial literacy. You know, they said that illiteracy is no longer the inability to read and write, but illiteracy is the inability to learn, unlearn, and relearn. And brothers and sisters, we're going to have to unlearn a lot of things we learned about financial literacy and relearn how to get ahead in life. 57% of people are financially illiterate, but not you. If you look at our comment section, right now, we have some of the smartest people. You go to some of my other videos, I am shocked every time that I open up my phone and I see the comment section, because we have people who have been investing in their 401ks, people who know about 403bs, people who know about the tax consequences of early withdrawals, things of that nature. I am highly impressed to know that my channel is full of people like you who are financially literate. Usually some people leave a comment like great video, do this, heart emojis, on a lot of things you see on YouTube. But if you go to our comment section, you see people breaking down their distribution rates. They talk about the inflation rate, how that's going to affect each generation, whether it's Generation X or baby boomers or Social Security expiring in 2035, or should you retire early or retire later? It is wonderful. But anyway, I digress. But anyway, Americans are $1 trillion in debt, and they're in credit card debt. And it's really sad because these credit card companies are very predatorial. Once again, we are introduced to credit cards before we're introduced to savings accounts. And that is a scary thing. So just as hard as these credit card companies are pushing this on the consumer, we need to teach people how to grow and how to save. And that's why you're subscribed to Financial Advisors, Say the Darndest Things, because I am trying to take my energy to increase financial literacy. And this is why I bring videos like this to you to break it down so you can increase your financial literacy one video at a time. But let's keep going.
So perhaps it's no surprise that 88% of adults agree that high schools should require financial literacy courses. But for many of us, it's not quite true that we were never taught anything. So maybe the question isn't why didn't we learn this stuff, but rather why don't we remember any of it? And how do we change that? There's actually a pretty straightforward way to determine if you're financially literate. A simple set of questions known as the Big Three. One about interest rates, one about inflation, and one about risk diversification. Let's pause here to see how you do.
I'm gonna pause it for you here. So I'm not gonna rush. I'm gonna pause it for you here. For those who are listening on the podcast, the question is for interest rates. Suppose you had $100 in a savings account, and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much would you have in the account if you left the money in there to grow? A, more than $102, B, exactly $102, C, less than $102, D, don't know, E, refuse to answer. Okay, so let's do this. I'm going to help you with the test strategy that we learned in school. It's called the process of elimination. We know that D and E are not the right answers, right? So we just increased our chances of getting the right answer by 40%. So now we have a 33% chance of getting the answer right. So before we had five questions, 20% each. So we eliminated two. So that's 40% down. And then we divide that by three. So we have 33% chance of getting this right. So is it A, more than $102, B, exactly $102, or C, less than $102? And this is right here in interest rate. I'm gonna come back to this a little later. Let's go to understanding inflation. So imagine the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy A, more than today, B, exactly the same as today, C, less than today? And D and E is don't know and refuse to answer. So let's take these out, right? Because let's put it this way. Even if we guess, we have a 33% chance of getting it right. So let's not choose D on any of these, right? The next is understanding risk diversification. Do you think that the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. Is that A, true, B, false, C, don't know, and D, refuse to answer? Once again, we're going to eliminate those two. And now we have a 50-50 chance. So we really increased our chances of passing this quiz pretty high, right? So now you have a 50-50 chance to get that right. So let's go back to this interest rate question. So now you probably have your answers in your head. I'm going to give these answers to you and then actually give you a little bit more information that's going to help you make this calculation. So the first question is about interest rates. It says, suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much would you have in the account if you left the money to grow? Now, the answers are very general. This is not going to be a certified private wealth advisor professional designation question. So we're not going to get too difficult. But there's a thing called simple interest and then there's compound interest. I'm not going to get into the details of simple versus compound, but just know that there is a difference. And we'll talk about that in future episodes. But here, let's just answer the question here. It says A, more than $102, B, exactly $102, or C, less than $200. A, more than one. I'm sorry. All right. A, more than $102. B, exactly $102, or C, less than $102. And I apologize for those who listen on the podcast. I know it's going to be hard to follow. So the answer is going to be A, you're going to have more than $102. Why? Because with interest rates, if you have $100, every year you're going to increase the money that you make by 2%. The interest rate is going to be 2% that you're going to gain. So that's $102 the first year. The second year, you're going to gain another 2%. Let's just do simple interest here. You're going to gain another 2%. So that's another, you know, $2. And then you're going to do that for 5 years. So you're probably end up with over $110. And I say over because of compound interest, but let's just say around $110. So the answer is A, more than $102. Okay. Number two, understanding of inflation. So imagine the interest rate on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2% per year. Oh no, that's not good, right? Because we know that inflation, what? Eats up your purchasing power. I'm actually going to put that here somewhere where I talk about inflation and your purchasing power. After 1 year, would you be able to buy A, more than today, B, exactly the same as today, or C, less than today? So if you said B, exactly the same as today, you would be wrong. But if you said A, more than today, you'd be wrong again. The answer is going to be See, your interest is less than today. Why is that? It's because the interest rate on a savings account is growing at 1%, but the inflation rate, the cost of goods, are going up by 2%. So you are going to be negative 1. You are going to be down 1% of your ability to buy goods. So you're going to buy less than you are today. That's why we say that when you invest, that you are trying to keep up or beat inflation. So if you put money in a jar and you are getting literally 0% and inflation is going up by 4%, 3%, how much are you losing per year? Guaranteed negative 3 to -4% per year. So people say, I don't want to get in the market. It's too risky. I don't want to lose any money. Well, you're not losing physical money, but you are losing purchasing power, meaning you can't buy the same thing. So you might as well have lost it in the stock market if you wanted to, because it has the same effect. So whether you're down 4% in your account or you're down 4% in purchasing power, it has the same effect. Okay. So for all you big savers who puts all your money in a savings account because it feels safe, I'm letting you know you cannot save yourself from inflation. Now, maybe there's a year where there's no inflation or deflation or something like that, and maybe you come out on top that year. But every other year, things are just getting more expensive. Okay. So now let's go to understanding risk diversification. So do you think that the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. Now, just to give you some context of what those things are, I'm gonna help you out a little bit. I'm being a good teacher here. A single stock is like what you have in your retirement account. A lot of people I see, they have their company stock. They invest in their company. They're with their company. It feels familiar. You know, you work there, you know the ins and outs, you think you know the industry. So you have this high concentration of your stock, right? Let's say you work for XYZ company and 100% of your retirement's in XYZ company, right? Now a stock mutual fund has hundreds and sometimes thousands of different companies, right? Spread out, diversified. Which one is safer? The one with 1,000 different companies that maybe you're not familiar with, or one company that you are fully secure about? Which one? If you said true, that buying a single stock usually provides a safer return than a stock market, than a stock mutual fund, you'd be wrong. The answer is false. Diversification increases our safety. Why? Because if your one company goes bankrupt or they lose 50% of the market, your stock portfolio loses 50% or goes bankrupt and you go down to zero. But if you have 1,000 companies and one of them goes bankrupt, you still have 999 companies that's supporting your investment portfolio. So it's a little safer. So we're diversifying the risk. We don't have what they call concentration risk. So how did you do? Did you get the interest rate question right? Did you get the inflation question right? Or did you get the risk diversification right? Or did you get all of them right? But like I said, if you did not, that's okay. It's okay. We are improving our financial literacy. And once again, you're listening to financial advisors say the darndest thing so you can get the education that maybe you didn't get in school. But let's keep going with the video.
If you chose these answers, congrats, you're financially literate. And if you didn't...
Someone who is financially illiterate doesn't know what to do with their money, where their money's going, where their money currently lives, and doesn't even know the options.
Getting these answers right requires both a knowledge of financial vocabulary and the ability to make mental calculations. It takes time to understand this stuff.
You can't just like learn the basics in 1 or 2 days and then call it good.
In other words, financial literacy is a lot like, well, literacy. You can't just sit through one class on the alphabet and then expect to be able to pick up War and Peace. And you can't sit through one lesson on money management and expect to know exactly how to handle your own finances.
Amen.
The problem is, that's exactly how a lot of us were taught about these concepts. Since 1998, the Independent Council for Economic Education has been tracking legislative requirements at the state level for high school financial classes. And their data shows that back then, at least 21 states offered some form of financial education. And by 2011, nearly every state did. It's hard to tell how many of us actually took those classes, given that a lot of them weren't mandatory. But somewhere between learning about the Boston Tea Party for the 10th time, and that one day spent on World War I, your history teacher might have taken a crack at teaching you about credit card debt. But in the not-so-distant past, U.S. schools actually taught financial education pretty differently. We don't have great records of education standards from before the 80s, when the Department of Education was formed. But based on old teaching materials, it seems that up until the 50s or 60s, money management was a fixture in the public school curriculum, often as part of home economics class, alongside, you know, sewing and baking.
Brothers and sisters, I would really love to know your opinions. If any of you were in school around this time, in the comment section, let me know your experience with money management classes. Like, what were they teaching you? Were they teaching you things about economics? Were they teaching you things about credit card? What were they telling you just to work until you couldn't work no more? Let me know what school was like.
Students were learning how to budget for better living, use consumer credit, and save for their weddings. There were also standalone consumer education classes, which seemed to be less gendered. But that started to shift thanks to the space race. Worried that American students weren't measuring up to students in the USSR, in 1958, President Eisenhower signed the National Defense Education Act, which placed an importance on math, science, and foreign languages. And years later, the U.S. Department of Education published a landmark report that partially blamed the country's decline in educational performance on schools spending their time training their students for adulthood. That same document doubled down on Eisenhower's math and science-based educational goals, proposing new basics for nationwide curriculums. Since then, a steady march of legislation has made curriculums more and more focused on standardized testing, leaving even less room for life skills like financial education.
Ooh, is this true? Is this true, brothers and sisters? Did one president's ego to be the first man on the moon to race with the USSR turn our children away from topics like adulthood and marriage and focus on just their education? Now, don't get me wrong. I love education. I think we need it. This whole video is about financial literacy, literally. So I do support education and learn about the math and the science and foreign language and being a good person and all those things that come with it. But are we seeing a decline in the morality, the values and the beliefs because we took them out to school, when we took prayer out to school, when we stopped focusing on the family unit and started focusing more on our individual selves and just getting a good job and making a lot of money? That's where we saw our self-worth, and not necessarily in home economics. Learn how to cook, learn how to clean, how to take care of a family, how to support each other, how to love each other. That's sad, brothers and sisters. Did we really exchange the education of other cultures and times and things of that nature and history for our nucleus family? Did we technically make that sacrifice? And according to this, it is. I don't know if it's true or not. You know me, I like to look things up, but that's a good hypothesis. And I kind of believe it a little bit. I don't know about you. Let me know.
But thankfully, for at least the past decade, the pendulum appears to be swinging back. More and more students are receiving the kind of financial education that might stick, spending full semesters learning about things like household budgeting, taxes, credit management, and student loans. In 2022, 9 states required a standalone class to graduate. Another 14 required that students receive personal finance lessons within a different course. And 5 more states offered it as an elective.
So access has definitely ramped up dramatically.
And as of February 2024, at least 7 more states have active bills that would introduce mandatory classes. And there's good reason to be optimistic that more states will follow suit. Many of these bills even have rare bipartisan sponsorship, likely because financial education really works. It's been shown to improve credit scores, lower delinquency rates, reduce risky payday lending, and lead students to low-interest college financing. It even has a sort of trickle-up effect on the students' families and even the class's teachers. Researchers are also in the early phases of learning more about what kinds of lessons work best and which don't really stick, like any planning for retirement, maybe because that's just a bit too far off for high schoolers. So it might only be a matter of time before Americans remember as much about compound interest as they do about cellular energy production, and as much about inflation as the dimensions of triangles.
This was a really, really good video. Really good job, Fox. I'm really proud of how you put this presentation together. Well thought out, has some really great ideas about it. And then also to talking about how difficult it is to save for retirement. And that's the challenge I have as a financial advisor. I'm a certified private wealth advisor professional with over a decade of experience. And financial literacy is something that I try to do with my clients as I'm walking them through the process. Now, many of them pay me to do the details. They don't necessarily want to sit through a finance class. It's like, hey, Mr. Ridgeway, I'm giving you this $2, $3 million. I want you to invest it. I don't want to sit through an hour course about why you're investing, how you're investing, and what your projections are going to be. I ask you the question, you give me the answer, and I get to go home. And that's totally fine, right? Because the majority of you have made it this far. You don't necessarily need a financial lesson. That's why you hire professionals, so you don't have to think about financial literacy. You could just kind of focus on your job and creating the income you need for you and your family. Definitely well respected. But at the same time, though, when I do provide information with my clients, I am trying to make sure I give them enough information so they can make good financial decisions for their family. Once again, you're not just giving me the money, because I don't take the money. I have what they call a custodian. And my custodian at the moment is Charles Schwab. So a custodian is the outside bank that holds the assets. So clients think, oh, am I giving you the $1 million? Like, no, you're not giving me $1 million. No, you put it into the custodian. You look at your bank statement just like you normally do. It helps prevent theft and insecurity. So somebody says, you send me the check and I'm going to hold the check for you or hold the money for you. No, I don't do that. We do it. I don't think that's a good way to do it. You need to have a custodian bank who's going to send you your statements. That's where you get trouble like Madoff, where he was creating these statements himself. We don't do that here. We go through Charles Schwab. But anyway, I digress here. Let me know how you feel about this. I mean, do you think that financial literacy is on the rise? Are you supporting these legislations in your state to improve financial literacy? One thing I've seen here in our state is, yes, they are offering it, but they're also offering electives like, okay, you could take financial literacy or you could take an economics class and you can, you know, it's like, okay, why are you offering it if you're going to give it another elective, or that it's not necessarily mandatory if you have some other, you know, some other things, some other classes that you could take. So whatever it may be, I do think that we should have increase in financial literacy just for the pros that they outlined in the video. You know, I know retirement is so far off in the distance that we don't think about it, but the sooner we start saving for retirement, the easier retirement actually becomes. We start putting money away when we're 20 and 19. The compound effect of those 40 and 50 years is really going to improve, you know, our financial situation, where we're going to be more comfortable. Well, brothers and sisters, I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope you got the answers right, right? Did you get the answers right? The, you know, about the interest rate and diversification, things like that. If not, it's okay. Just keep listening to our show. We are going to cover topics like this. I have like 800 videos at the moment going over dividends, investing, inflation, retirement, 401ks, 403bs, all of it. So I'm not saying go dig through each and every one of them, but, you know, leave a note in the comment. Let me know what you think. I'll try to get down there as soon as I can to answer some of your questions, or maybe even respond to some of your comments and things of that nature, because I really want to know what you think and how we can improve financial literacy and take this to the next level. Well, brothers and sisters, once again, if you like videos like this, make sure you subscribe, you like, you share it to a friend. And the best thing you can actually do for me is what? You can either download the Four Pillars to Christian Investing, which goes over debt management, savings, investing, and wealth transfers. You can go to Amazon.com if you want to download. You can look up A.B. Ridgeway. The book pops right up. You can pay money or you can get it free in the description. The link is going to be down there. You download it. It's going to be in your first email that you send out to you. So, but what I really want you to do, just watch another video. So we're going to have about two that pop up at this end screen. Just go check this out. There's going to be a little picture of me in the middle. That's the subscribe button. So if you're not subscribed, you can click that button. You can get financial information directly from YouTube in your notifications so you don't miss an episode of Financial Advisors Say the Darndest Things. Well, that's it for me. My name is A.B. Ridgeway, and I'll see you on the other side of your blessing.